radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thanks, Dave, and welcome once again to Yesteryear. On today's program, we present Have Gun, Will Travel, starring John Denier as Paladin. But first, it's Jim and Marion Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly. Jim and Marion met in a church choir and later played small-time vaudeville houses before auditioning for a Peoria radio station in 1924. After performing in the O. Henry Twins, the Air Scouts, and Smackout, the Jordans hit big time with Fibber McGee and Molly, which aired from April of 1935 through March of 1956. Jim and Marion Jordan also starred as the McGees in three feature films, including Look Who's Laughing, Here We Go Again, and with Edgar Burton and Charlie McCarthy in Heavenly Days. Their popular radio series launched two of radio's most successful spin-offs, The Great Gildersleeve and Beulah. On today's program, Fibber wants to make a cake for Molly in the worst way, but Mrs. Uppington fears that it could be her last birthday if Molly eats it. From May of 1941, Fibber bakes Molly a birthday cake on Fibber McGee and Molly.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton, Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Johnson Wax program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's self-polishing glow coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Ever throw a kiss to a beautiful girl? Unsatisfactory, wasn't it? So is a birthday without a birthday cake. And our hero is not the man to see his life partner neglected in this way. So, here at 79 Wistful Vista, cookbook in hand and a determined gleam in his eye, while his spouse stands by full of love and skepticism, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, now, McGee, please, don't go to all that trouble. Put that cookbook down.
What?
If you must have a birthday cake for me, go out and buy one.
No, sirree, I'm going to bake this with my own ever-loving hands. This is going to be a cake like you never flung a fang into.
I'll bet it isn't that. What kind of a cake is it going to be, dearie?
Oh, shucks, I can't tell you that. It's going to be a surprise. Now, you go on in the other room and read a book or something.
Oh, let me watch
it. Ah, you'll keep trying to tell me how to do things.
No, I won't, really.
Okay, then. Sit down and be quiet. Don't smoke till you're speaking to... Or, I mean, just keep quiet. Now, let's see. Budget cakes, sponge cakes, angel food cakes, upside-down cakes, party cake... Ah, party cakes.
Party cake, baker's man.
Now, remember your promise.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Page 24. Oh, here we are. Six eggs, separated. Hey, Molly, where's the eggs?
In the refrigerator.
Why, that's no place to keep eggs. Takes twice as long to fry them when they're cold.
I never thought of that. I'll keep them in the oven after this, dearie.
Let's see now. Eggs, milk, butter, horseradish. That'll do, I guess. We'll see.
Heavenly days, you won't eat all those pots and pans, will you?
Look, now, you cook your way and I'll cook my way. Here, you hold three eggs and I'll put three of them back here on the shelf.
What's the idea?
What's the idea? The recipe says to separate six eggs.
Oh.
Okay, here's a cup and a half of sugar. Four cups of shifted cake flour. Quarter of a teaspoon of salt. No pepper. 2 squares of chocolate. Okay, give me them eggs again. I guess they've been separated long enough. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's see, 5. Boy, that's a lot of eggs. I should have bought you a fur coat. It would have been cheaper. Ah, me. Where's the egg beater?
Right there in the drawer, right in front of you. Though I always use a fork myself.
Yeah, that's the trouble with you women. Some unsung genius spends his lifetime inventing an egg beater to save you trouble. And what do? Ignore it and use a fork.
Well, now listen, you men are no better.
What you mean?
You spend your young manhood looking for a good cook to marry and then mess around the kitchen yourself. Here, what are you doing?
Well, I'm squirting a little sewing machine oil on this egg beater.
Dear, dear.
It's kind of stiff.
But listen, your cake will taste like oil.
Oh, no, it won't. I took care of that. I mixed a little vanilla in with that oil. Yeah, that's better. Oh, boys.
Come in.
Oh, dear.
Hello there, kids. How you fix for postage stamps?
I don't know, old-timer. How many you want?
Don't want any. I'm selling them. 2-cent stamps for 1 cent. Today only.
Heavenly days. How on earth can you do that?
Forgot to mail my Christmas cards this year, daughter. Just found them and soaked the stamps off. How many you want? For every 50 you buy, I throw in a little bottle of glue. Hey, what you doing there, Johnny?
Well, it's my birthday, Mr. Oldtimer. He's baking me a cake.
He is, eh? You know how to cook, Johnny?
Well, we'll soon know.
What do you mean, do I know how to cook? Sure, I know how to cook. I'm not only a cook, I was the greatest vegetable and fruit man in Peoria at one time.
I never knew that, McGee.
Well, I've been covering it up, that's why. I wrecked my career. I was a failure.
How's that, Johnny? It's any of my business, which it ain't, but I'm interested, and when a feller's interested, you can forgive a certain inquisitiveness because...
Okay, 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 I'll tell you. I was trying to raise a seedless watermelon, and I done it, too. And that's what finished me.
Oh, well, if you succeeded, why did it finish you?
Caused a terrific demand for seedless watermelons, and I couldn't fill it.
Why not?
I couldn't grow them.
Why not?
No seeds.
Well, as I was saying, one feller says to t'other feller, see, he says.
Yes, sir, old-timer. I had such a knack with flowers and vegetables, I could even bring them back to life long after they'd wilted. Why, I'd take an old wrinkled beet and give it the McGee treatment, and presto, back from the dead. Dead beat McGee, I was known as.
Say, how about my cake?
Dead beat McGee, the ding-dong daddy of the dirt doctors, drudging in the ditches from dawn to dusk over discolored, decrepit, and darn near defunct Daisy's dogwooden deodars, dazzling doubters with my debonair displays of dilly-dallias, daffy-daffodils, and dandy-dandelions discovered and developed by dead beat McGee, the diggity-digger and daddy dude from down on the Delta and deep in Dixie, but shucks, I sound like a dad-ratted pixie.
Thank you.
see. Shift flour and salt together and fold into yolk mixture. Hey, you know where my tin snips are?
What on earth you want tin snips for?
I got to cut down a teaspoon. It says here to put in a fourth of a teaspoon of salt. To make a fourth of a teaspoon.
Don't be silly. Just fill it a fourth full.
Huh? Oh, say, I could do that, couldn't I?
You knew it was silly all the time.
Yeah, those bowlers from Peoria left it. Baby, is this going to be a cake?
I'll bet it'll be a cake. I'll bet this'll make Prudence Penny feel like a nickel.
I would have made you upside down cake, but I don't have much luck with those. The blood keeps rushing to my head. We'll see who that is at the front door, will you, Molly? I gotta finish mixing this batter.
All right, dearie, and I hope it gets to first base.
Huh? Oh.
I'm coming.
Oh, can he bake a birthday cake? Fibber boy, fibber boy. Can he bake a birthday cake? Charming Fibber. He can bake a birthday cake that'll make your molars ache, but he's a young thing and cannot leave his mother.
Oh, McGee, it's Mrs. Uppington, and she wants to...
Oh, what is that old fuss?
McGee, I said it's Mrs. Uppington, and she...
Tell the old moose I don't... Oh! Hi, Uppy.
Good day, Mr. McGee.
Good day.
May I ask what you imagine you're concocting there?
Well, it's a cake for me, Abigail. This is my birthday.
Oh, really? Well, congratulations, my dear. I won't ask which one it is because I know.
Oh, yeah? Well, which one?
Her last one, if she eats any of that cake.
Oh, I don't know, Uppy. I swing a pretty nasty casserole when I put my mind to it.
Really?
Yeah, betcha. Let me know when your next birthday limps around and I'll whip you up a cake, too. Only give me plenty of notice.
Why, Mr. McGee?
Well, you don't think we could get enough candles right here in town on short notice.
Well, I must say, Mr. McGee,
yes,
that I...
Yes, that's right. That was a very bad insinuation, dearie. I'm sure Abigail isn't many years older than I am. Though I was a little flower maiden at your wedding. Remember, Abigail?
Oh, indeed I do, my dear. Indeed I do. Even though I was still a stiff of a girl at the time, I remember asking an usher to get you a chair. You looked so tired.
Well, I was just tired from laughing so hard.
What was the joke?
Well, Otis Cadwallader, you know.
Oh, that mug.
Otis was one of the little boys who was carrying the train of Abigail's wedding dress, and he had it a little too high, and he whispered that the bride was bow-legged. Not that I ever believed it, Abigail.
Well, I should hope...
Until I saw you in your jodhpurs.
Please, Mrs. McGee, I think the discussion of my nuptials has gone far enough.
Yes, me too, girls. We sure squeezed that subject dry. Let's get back to birthdays. Want me to bake a cake for your birthday, too?
Thank you, no, Mr. McGee. I have all my special pastry made by an expensive caterer.
Oh.
My last birthday cake cost me $75.
Oh, not really. Did you demand an itemized bill, Abigail?
Itemized?
Yeah, it was probably $5 for the cake and $70 hush money.
Well, really, Mr. McGee, well, I have never been snubbed like this in all my life.
Honest, Abigail? You ought to walk down the street in San Diego some night when the fleet's in.
Oh, enough! A good call.
Poor Abigail.
Yeah.
Well, how are you doing with your cake?
Well, it's coming along swell, though it's kind of tricky folding these egg whites. They won't hold a crease. Hey, I haven't got enough sugar.
No, I don't...
Dad rat it, can't a guy bake a cake in peace around here? Come in. Why don't people...
Oh, good day, Mr. Wimple.
How do you do? May I step in a moment out of the wet?
Oh, is it raining?
No, I've been crying.
You poor man. Come right in. What's the matter?
It's my wife.
Oh.
We had a terrible argument this morning, and I'm afraid I lost my temper.
Oh.
I actually shook my fist at her.
You did, eh? Was she scared?
Fortunately, she didn't see me.
You know, I think you're just too meek, Mr. Wimple. You should stand up for your rights. A woman has no respect for a man she can dominate.
Oh, I know that, Mrs. McGee. And I really went round and round with her once.
Did it do any good, Wimple?
Yes, for a while. But as soon as I got out of the hospital, it started all over again. It's really discouraging.
Oh. Well, what can we do for you, Mr. Wimple?
I just wondered if you had a small piece of raw beefsteak I could borrow. My wife has a black eye.
What? A black eye? Why, Wimple, you mean you actually...
Oh, no, Mr. McGee. She tried to chase a dog out of our yard and stepped on a rake. Flew up and hit her in the eye.
Oh, well, that's too bad, but I'm sorry we haven't got a bit of raw beefsteak in the house.
Personally, I never thought much of that beefsteak treatment for black eyes anyway, Wimple.
Oh, I didn't want it for her eye, Mr. McGee.
Huh?
I was going to give it to that dog, bless his heart.
Poor Mrs. Wimple, that must have been a very painful experience.
Oh, I don't know. It's probably the only time in her life an old rake ever made a pass at her. Must have been quite as...
Hello, folks. What's it? Oh, say, what goes on?
Molly's birthday, Harlow. I'm running up a cake.
Really? Well, many happy returns,
well,
Molly.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wilcox. And the balance of the day to yourself.
Here, let me give you a hand with that cake, Fibber.
No, no, let go, Harlow. I know what... Hey, look out!
Oh, now, Mr. Wilcox, see what you boys did. Spilled a big gob of batter on my linoleum.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right, Molly. It's a simple matter to wipe it up with a damp cloth. Why, what was I thinking of, anyway?
Aren't you ashamed?
Yes, I feel pretty bad.
Well, just for that, I won't give you a piece of this birthday cake when it's done.
Really?
No.
Oh, now I do feel bad. Ha-ha! Oh, that's awful. No cake. Ha-ha! I guess that'll teach me a lesson. Well, happy birthday, Molly. Ha-ha! No cake!
Ha-ha! Killing himself. Trouble with that guy is he's got a single-track mind. And it's full of freight cars loaded with Johnson's wax. Well, how about that sugar?
Well, I'll go right away, dearie.
No, no. Now, wait a minute. It's your birthday, and you're not supposed to do anything. I'll get it. Here, untie this apron. Thanks. I'll be back in just a minute. I'll run across the... Hey, can I borrow a cup of sugar until tomorrow?
Hi, mister. What's cooking? What?
Oh, hi, sis. Is your mother home?
Sure she is, I betcha.
May I see her a minute?
No.
Huh?
I said no.
What do you mean, no? You tell your mother I want to see her, will you?
You can see her, mister.
Now, don't be obstinate, sis.
I'm not being obstinate, I betcha. I'm being nice.
Well, what's so nice about not letting me see your mother?
She's taking a bath.
Well, why didn't you say so?
Well, you didn't ask me.
Well, look, maybe you can handle this deal yourself. How's about the loan of a cup of sugar, sis?
Well, I'm for graduated.
You mean granulated.
Hmm?
I says you mean granulated. Graduated means when you get out of school.
I know it. I bought this sugar this afternoon on the way home.
Well, how about it, sis?
Mister, I told you once you can't see her. She's taking the bath, don't you remember?
I'm talking about a cup of sugar. Forget your mother.
I will not. She never forgets me.
I didn't mean that you should. Look, let's start over.
All righty.
Hi, sis. Can I borrow a cup of sugar?
That isn't the way you did it before. You asked if you could see my mother.
Well, I'm doing it different this time. All I want is a cup of sugar.
What you gonna do with it?
Oh, I'm baking a cake.
Oh. No fooling, mister. What do you want with it?
I told you I'm baking a cake. It's my wife's birthday.
Can you really cook, mister? Can you really,
Certainly I can cook. Come over and see the cake in a couple of hours. I'll cut you a slice.
Gee, I wish I had a slice of it now, I bet you.
Why?
Oh, you know. Wait here and I'll go get you some sugar, mister.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
The King's Men sing Three Blind Mice.
Three blind mice, three little innocent mice.
Number one is thin, number two is fat.
Number three so fierce he scares the cat.
I'm number one, number two.
Number three.
Three brave mice, three hungry mice, three hungry mice. They lived in a farmhouse out in the sticks with a farmer and his little old wife. Pat, pitter, pat, pitter, patter, pitter, pat.
Slightest breeze.
One day he sniffed with his very long nose and shouted,
I smell cheese.
The fat little mouse took hold of his tail.
The thin one led the way.
The fierce little mouse brought up the rear to chase the cat away.
Three hungry mice, three hungry mice, scampering off to find the cheese and cut themselves a slice. Pitter-patter, 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 pitter-patter. Whoa! Three happy mice, three happy mice. They nibbled and nibbled and nibbled some more, till one by one they lay down on the floor and all fell asleep and began to snore. Three sleepy mice. Oh, the farmer's wife, sneaking down the hall with a carving knife. Three little mice, too full to run away, lost their little tails before you can say. Three blind mice, three sorry mice.
The thin little mouse is thinner now.
The fat one became a rat.
And the fierce little mouse is just a smile on the face of the old tomcat.
Three blind mice, three blind mice. That is the end of the three little tails of the three.
That cake looks very nice.
Oh, wait till you taste it. It'll be ready to eat as soon as I finish squirting happy birthday to Molly onto it. D-A-Y-M-O-L... Uh-oh. You don't mind if I just call you Mal, do you? I started too big and I ain't got room on here for Molly.
Oh, that's all right, dearie. I think it looks beautiful. Shall I get the candles?
No, I'll get them. Where are they?
In the hall closet.
Okay, you get them.
All right, I won't get many either.
Huh?
I don't...
Ma'am?
I'm sorry. I don't want to be like the girl who said she was 21, and when they brought home the cake, it looked like a prairie fire.
That gag will never be 21 again either. Can he bake a birthday cake? Fibber boy, fibber boy. Can he bake a birthday cake? Charming fibber. He can mix a batter up into a nifty hunk of stuff, but
here's the candles, dearie.
What?
Here they are. Here's the candles.
What? You mean you opened that hall closet without... I don't believe it. Let me go take a look. You start putting the candles on the cake.
All right, dearie. I'll do that. Oh, dear. Who's that now? Come in.
Ah, there, Mrs. McGee. Good day.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, I see you've been baking yourself a cake. Looks delicious.
Oh, I didn't bake it, Mr. Gildersleeve. McGee did it.
What? Why, that... He did? By that little cake cooker. Well, I must congratulate the little rascal. Where is he?
Well, he just went in the other room to check up on the...
Checking up, eh? I hope he survived it. So he baked this cake, did he? Well, I see it's a birthday cake for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations, my dear.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
My goodness, this is an occasion. I'll just have to have a piece of this cake in honor of your birthday, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, now you better wait for McGee, Mr. Gildersleeve. He might be annoyed if
My little chum wouldn't begrudge me a little piece of cake. Come, come now, my dear. Hand me a knife. Thank you. Well, it cuts nicely, doesn't it? Care for some yourself?
No, thank you. Not now. I'll wait till...
Oh, hi, Gildersleeve.
Hello, McGee.
Why?
He thought you wouldn't mind his taking a piece of your cake, dearie.
Well, of all the dead-ratted nerves. I baked that cake for my little wife, Gildersleeve. You got a lot of brass barging in here and hogging the first piece. Why?
Now, look here, McGee. Whose birthday is this, yours or your wife?
Well, it was my cake, and you didn't have any right to come
barging. Oh, now forget it, McGee. Yeah. After all, it is my birthday, and I don't want any bickering.
Well, shucks, if this big, lard bucket had the manners of a well-bred hyena, he'd have known better than to come barging. Hey, look at Throckmorton. He's turning purple.
Oh! Heavenly days, what's the matter, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Oh, don't fuss about him, Molly. He'll do anything to attract attention. Quit clowning, you big ape.
No, McGee, he's not clowning. There's something the matter with him. He's pointing to his throat, huh? See?
Oh, you suppose... Hey, Gildersleeve, what's the matter?
I'll blow... Oh. What did you put in that cake, you little criminal? I swallowed something. Get me a doctor, quick!
Oh, my gosh, he did it. Quick, Molly, call an ambulance. We got to get him to a hospital.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Take it easy now. He just swallowed a nutshell or a cork out of the vanilla bottle or something.
Do something quick, McGee. Maybe it was ground glass.
Hurry up, Molly. Call an ambulance. This is serious. Go on. Here, Gildersleeve, lie down here on the kitchen table.
Yeah.
Loosen your collar and tie.
Yeah.
Now, take it easy.
What was it, McGee? What did I eat?
Now, don't worry, Gildersleeve. You'll be all right as soon.
Go faster, driver. We'll have you in the hospital in 3 minutes, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh.
And maybe this will teach you not to make a pig of yourself, Rocky.
I know. I'm sorry, McGee, and I certainly appreciate all the trouble you're going to save me, little chum.
What do you mean, save you? I baked a diamond ring in that cake for Molly. That's what I'm trying to save.
Oh.
Shake it up, driver. Save you.
River and Molly will be back in just a moment.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Well, McGee, this should teach you a lesson to stay out of the kitchen. You know, it's no place for a man.
Is that so? Well, don't forget to remember the highest paid cooks in the world are men.
Why, of course they are.
Betcha.
Women are too smart to spend 12 hours a day over a hot stove.
Huh? Oh, good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Finishes for the home and for industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
From May of 1941, it's been Fibber McGee and Molly. In a moment, it's Have Gun, Will Travel with Brother Lost, starring John Denier as Paladin, as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and welcome back to Yesteryear. As our program continues, next up, it's Have Gun, Will Travel with Brother Lost, starring John Denier as Paladin. Have Gun, Will Travel premiered on CBS television in September of 1957, quickly becoming one of television's top-rated series, and reversed the usual trend by adding a radio version beginning in November of 1958. Gunsmoke producer Norman McDonald launched the radio version of Have Gun, Will Travel, this after losing control of the Gunsmoke TV series. Radio's Have Gun, Will Travel aired through November of 1960, with John Denier bringing his own forceful interpretation to the role originated on TV by Richard Boone. From November of 1959, it's Brother Lost. On this edition, the man called Paladin attempts to help Maritha Fulton locate her long-lost brother. It's Have Gun, Will Travel on Yesteryear.
You men are mistaken. I'm not an executioner. But you're still going to pay me that money because I came a long way to face this ridiculous situation. Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin. Miss Wong, what are you giggling about?
Oh, Mr. Paladin, you look so funny. Play that game. Silverdollar, throw him in air. Let him fall. Pick him up. Throw him in air. Let him fall. What is this game?
This is not a game, Miss Wong. It's serious business.
Oh, how so?
You see, I've had an urgent wire from a man named Jules Cleaver. He wants me to come to a place named Stone's Crossing. Never heard of it.
No.
Immediately.
Oh, Mr. Paladin. Why you fritter away your time playing games when you have urgent business?
Miss Wong, it wasn't a game. The opera ball is day after tomorrow, and I'd planned on that. So I said to myself, I'll toss a coin. Heads, I'll take the job. Tails, I'll go to the ball.
So?
It came up heads. I take the job. And then I said, no. 3 out of 5. Heads.
Heads.
4 out of 7. Heads.
Heads.
5 out of 9. Heads.
Heads.
So it looks like I better take the job. Miss Wong.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, play that game some more. It's much fun to watch.
I rode into a section of Nevada territory I'd never traveled before. A stark, desolate plain, with its line to the horizon broken only by sparse, dry sagebrush. The ground was lava-formed, hot and hard, and the ash-like dust that rose off it burned my eyes, closed my throat. I'd gone about 5 miles when my horse stumbled and fell, broke his leg. I was reminded then that when things seem bad, they can always get worse. There was nothing to do but shoulder my gear, walk back to the last water hole I had seen, and hope that help would show up. 3 days passed before I heard the sound I was waiting for. You better go a little easy on that water there. Now hold it, friend. There's no need to reach for that gun. Doesn't look to me as if you could lift it, let alone aim it straight.
You shouldn't sneak up on a man like that.
You better let me take a look at that wound.
It's no use, mister.
All right, let me just take a look at it. Huh, rifle, huh?
Lucky shot.
This should have had attention.
I was a mite short of time. Posse been trailing me for 5 days.
Posse?
Out of Marvin. He didn't take kindly to my shooting one of their citizens.
What was the trouble?
No trouble. Somebody paid me $500 for killing him.
Hired gun.
You ever hear Myron Curtis?
Yes.
That's me. Hey, what are you doing sitting out here by this water hole besides poking into people's business?
My horse broke his leg out there in the desert.
Had to shoot him?
That's right.
Well, now, this worked out just dandy. I'm going to make you a present of my little mare there. I won't be needing her.
Well, now, look, you...
You watch her left front hoof. She's missing a shoe. Where are you headed?
Stone's Crossing.
Stone's Crossing. That was going to be my next stop. Fella sent for me. Let's see, Hanson. That's it. Mike Hansen. I wonder what he's got up his sleeve. I guess I'll never know now.
Curtis? I buried Myron Curtis, then mounted his mare and started once more for Stone's Crossing and my appointment with Jules Cleaver. The going was slow. It was almost nightfall when I decided to make camp and go on to the town the next morning. I was gathering firewood when I heard the two horses. They came from the direction of the setting sun, and I wasn't able to see until they were right on me that both riders held rifles pointed in my direction.
Don't make one move, mister.
Hey, what's the idea?
Rally?
Yeah?
Keep your rifle on him now while I get his gun.
And now, wait a minute.
We don't want no talk from you, Curtis.
Curtis?
Just give me that gun. You know, I'm like this. I just don't give up. The others, they turn back, but not me. I knew I'd find you.
Would it do any good for me to tell you that I am not Curtis?
Not a lick.
Did you ever see Curtis?
Nope. We joined up when the posse organized back there in Marvin. All I had to know is that we was after a killer.
Well, what makes you think that I'm that killer?
Let me tell you something. Ed Wills don't bow to nobody, Indian or white, when it comes to tracking a man. Tell him, Crowley.
That's right. Ain't nobody better than Ed.
I followed your trail for too many miles out of Marvin not to recognize them tracks when we crossed them again back there. Your barefoot horse put the noose around your neck, Curtis. Now, Crowley, get down here and get his hands tied behind his back.
We're going to take him back to Marvin, Ed?
Yeah. But he'll be slung over that mare on his belly when he goes. We're going to hang him first.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
I sat through the night, my hands and feet bound and the two rifles trained on me. Then just before sunup, we rode out in search of a tree to serve as gallows. Unfortunately, after a time, we were successful. I sat on the little mare under a spreading limb with the noose tight around my neck while the men made their preparations, and I hadn't the slightest idea how to save myself. I only knew I must stall as long as possible.
Hey, Ed, this is awful close to Stone's Crossing. There's some people don't take to this, you know.
Yeah, this is the first stand of trees we come to.
I know, but there's some people's awful finicky about hangings.
Yeah, it won't take long now. As soon as I get this rope over. Anna.
Hey, I'd like to ask you something.
Fire away. Your time's getting short.
Would it bother you to learn later that you had hanged the wrong man?
Yes, it would. And that's the truth. As far as I can see, you ain't the wrong man. Tie off the end of the rope there, Crowley.
Suppose I told you that Curtis is dead, that he gave me this horse.
Well, now, just supposing you did. You hear that, Crowley? Looky, Curtis, the way I heard it, you're a pretty slick one. You ought to be able to do better than that.
Yes, I guess I'll have to.
Hey, Ed, I can hear a horse headed this way.
Yeah. Well, looks like we're ready. Stand back, Crowley, while I give this mare a whack. Get her going.
Wait.
Yeah?
I trust you are a God-fearing man.
I am that.
Then surely you will allow me a moment to silently make my peace with my maker.
Ed, can't you see he's stalling? That horse is moving in here fast.
Sure is. Sorry, Curtis. Guess you'll have to die unrepented. Give the horse a whack, Crowley.
Wait a minute.
Now, what is this? What's going on here?
You see, he was with a posse. We trailed this man from Marvin.
Now, this here's Myron Curtis. He's wanted for a killing.
Who? Myron Curtis, hired gun.
These men are mistaken, mister. My name is Paladin.
Wait a minute. Let's have a look at you. Well, of course. I didn't recognize you right off with that growth of beard. It's been a long time.
You know this man?
Yes. And his name is Paladin.
It can't be. We followed his trail for Marvin, I tell you.
Look, all I've got to say to you two is get out of here fast before I take you into the sheriff.
Well, I'm a little confused. Because, of course, you've never seen me before in your life. But I'm mighty grateful.
Just glad I happened along when I did, Curtis.
Paladin.
Oh, you can drop that now. It's all right. I know you're Curtis.
Oh, you do?
Sure, you have to be. I was wondering when you were going to show up.
Yes?
I'm Mike Hansen. I've begun to think maybe you hadn't received my message. But I can see that you ran into a little trouble getting here.
I certainly didn't.
I have to turn off at the fork up here. I guess you want to get on into town. But maybe this is as good a time as any to bring up my proposition.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
When I heard about you, Curtis, I knew you were the man to do this job for me. That's why I sent for you.
And the job?
Well, the man like you, no need to beat about the bush. Curtis, Stone's Crossing is a pretty big town, and it's going to get bigger. But it's never going to be big enough to hold me and a man named Jules Cleaver.
Jules Cleaver?
I intend that Stone's Crossing is going to be my town. Cleaver's in my way. I'm going to lay it right on the line. I want you to get rid of him for me.
I see.
Will $3,000 handle it?
$3,000? Hanson, could we do it this way? Could we let the matter rest right here for now? You'll hear from me.
Sure, Curtis. I'll figure to hear from you later.
I was grateful to Mike Hanson for saving my life, but I figured the explanations I owed him would have to wait. After all, Jules Cleaver was my client. I had traveled a long way to keep this assignment. I checked into the hotel at Stone's Crossing and called at Cleaver's home that afternoon. Mr. Cleaver?
Yes?
Your servant told me I'd find you here in your study. I'm Paladin, Mr. Cleaver.
Paladin? Oh, where have you been? I've been expecting you for days.
Well, I ran into a few delays. I got into town this morning, but there are a few things I had to take care of, like a bath, a shave, a decent meal. So, what's on your mind, Mr. Cleaver?
Ah, that's what I like. You're a businessman. I'm a businessman. Let's not waste time. Let's get right to the point. Sit down, Paladin.
All right.
Paladin, a businessman, or anyone for that matter, striving for success or certain attainments, finds, as a matter of course, obstacles along the way. If he intends to forge ahead, the obstacles must be removed, right?
Yes, yes, I suppose so.
Now, I'm a determined man.
Oh?
At the moment, there's an obstacle in my path. A man named Mike Hansen.
Yes?
And I'm going to lay it right on the line. I want you to get rid of him for me. How about, $3,000 for the job?
$3,000. Well, I've come a long way for this meeting, Mr. Cleaver.
Yeah.
It's been uncomfortable and miserable. I was nearly hanged in the bargain, but I'm afraid I've arrived here to find that there's been a misunderstanding.
What do you mean?
I am not an executioner, Mr. Cleaver.
Huh? Your gun is for hire, isn't it?
Well, my... Look, suppose we let the deal remain right here for the moment. I'll get in touch with you.
Oh. All right.
I had been surprised to find Stone's Crossing the prosperous town that it was. Then, as I rode back to my hotel, I took note of the fact that all the places of business seemed to be owned and controlled by either M. Hansen or J.J. Cleaver. It appeared that I was involved with the two leading citizens. That afternoon, I gave the matter careful consideration. Then I sent messages to the two gentlemen. Oh, hello, Hanson. Come in.
I got your message.
You're right on time. Want a drink?
Oh, no, thanks. I don't have much time. Well, did you decide to accept my offer, Curtis?
Hanson, I am not Myron Curtis. He is dead.
Dead?
Yes. And my name is Paladin.
Well,
excuse me. Hello, Cleaver.
Cleaver. Come in. Hanson. Paladin,
now,
what's the meaning of this?
What's going on here?
Now, you'll find out, both of you. Sit down.
I still want to know.
And be quiet. Gentlemen, I asked you to meet with me here in my hotel because I feel that we're involved in a situation that requires further discussion. Now, this morning, Mr. Hanson, you made me an offer of $3,000 to kill Mr. Cleaver.
What?
And you, Mr. Cleaver, early this afternoon made me an offer of $3,000 to kill Mr. Hanson.
Well, now, my look here. Cleaver,
quiet. Now, you both can see what this means, can't you? This means that I would have $6,000 and you would both be dead.
Now,
you sit down. I'm going to give you a chance to reconsider. This is my offer. I'm going to lay it on the line, a phrase you gentlemen are so fond of. You will each pay me $3,000, and I will see that you both stay alive.
Oh, what
you're
kind
nothing
of talk
but a cheap gunslinger,
this?
Paladin.
And you're going to pay me that money, too, because I came a long ways to face this ridiculous situation, and I brought you together here today so you could learn just how stupid you are. Now, I am not a killer, but you, Cleaver, didn't know that when you hired me for this job. You thought you'd bought yourself an executioner.
Len, how come
and the
you
man you hired, Hanson, never managed to make it this far. He died before you could make a deal with him. So, through circumstance, you gentlemen have another chance.
Paladin.
There's room in Stone's Crossing for both of you. May I suggest that you try to share the town in peace? Each of you, in attempting to destroy the other, just might find yourself destroyed. Now, gentlemen, shall we have a drink?
Mr. Paladin, so nice to have you home again.
Thank you, hey boy.
Missy Wong have surprise for you.
Oh? What's she been up to now?
You wait, you'll see. You go in, Mr. Paladin.
Well, now... Well, what's all this?
Very fancy, huh? Oh, Missy Wong, so sorry you can't go to Opera Ball. When she clean rooms in hotel, she save all party favors. Decorate for you.
Well, I'm overwhelmed. Look at that. Paper hats, balloons, streamers. Oh, this is festive. I tell you what, hey boy. Tonight, we'll order up some champagne. You and Miss Wong and I will have our own ball.
Oh, Esau, very nice. Hey, Miss Paladin, you have a very angry red scar on neck. What is that?
It's a rope burn, hey boy.
Rope burn?
Yes. It's to remind me the next time I travel in Nevada territory to be sure to bypass a place called Stone's Crossing.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy and Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun, Will Travel by Ann Dowd. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Jack Moyles, Joseph Cranston, Bartlett Robinson, and Vic Perrin. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
Radio's Have Gun, Will Travel from November of 1959, starring John Denier as Paladin. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition of Yesteryear, but hope you'll make it a point to be with us again at this time next week and invite your friends to tune in to the best of old-time radio right here on Yesteryear. Till then, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Memories, 89.1 FM.
And now, another memorable moment from the golden age of radio with Bob Hope.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob Coast Guard Hope telling you to put Pepsodent on your brush and use plenty of traction, and none of your teeth will be missing in action. Yes, sir, tonight we're broadcasting for the Coast Guard. These are the boys who guard the coast, and they really guard it. Only trouble they have here today is finding it. Yes, sir. We've had some overambitious dew falling out here for the past few days. The Chamber of Commerce wouldn't even admit it was raining until the SS Arkansas anchored at sunset in Vine this morning. But it's great to be here with the Coast Guard. That's a fighting group and efficient. This Coast Guard outfit did such a great job during the Prohibition rum-running days that W.C. Fields almost died of malnutrition. And anything in the ocean not signed up with the Allies hasn't a chance with the Coast Guard. Every morning, whales come in to report their positions. Coast Guardsmen are always with the invasion forces. In fact, by the time the Marines get a situation well in hand, the Coast Guard is charging tourists 10 cents apiece to sail by and look at it. I know what side my audience is buttered on. And the beach patrol of the Coast Guard live in little huts right down on the beach, and it's very convenient. Every time the tide comes in, they get the laundry done, whether it needs it or not. And they don't call them huts, they call them hutlets. A hutlet, that's sort of an open-air oxygen tent. Each man patrols 10 miles of beach, and they pass by so regularly, each clam on the West Coast pulls his neck in on the hour and half hour. And I don't know if those guys down there on the beaches get lonesome or not, but one fella spent 3 nights in a row trying to date his own echo. I asked one guy on the beach patrol if he had to walk very much, and he said, I don't know, but when I enlisted, I had feet. And the men on the beach patrol do a lot of rescue work, too. One sentry heard a girl yell, help, help, and he ran over, but before he got there, the guy drove away. I have a fast car. I went for a ride today in a Coast Guard cutter, and it was a trifle rough. A trifle rough, that's a nautical expression meaning very invigorating, and don't crowd, I was at the rail first. I won't say there was much of a breeze, but it was the first time I ever spit in my own eye. And they let me shoot one of their 5-inch guns. I don't want to brag and say I hit anything, but you know the City Hall here at Long Beach? Well, it looks just as nice as San Pedro. Yes, sir, men of the Coast Guard, that wraps it up for now. It's been great visiting all you fellas. You know, Coast Guard has always meant tough men and tough little cutters who tackle the oceans on stormy nights to rescue shipwrecked sailors, who bust up icebergs in our shipping lanes and keep friendly beacons burning in lighthouses from New England to the Golden Gate. Always a great name from the Atlantic to the Pacific, to today, it's a great name from Italy to the Marshall Islands. For it's the Coast Guard that races up to those beachheads to deliver the fighting Marines. And the Coast Guard that has kept Uncle Sam's harbors free of major catastrophe the past 2 years. Guarding harbors and vessels against accident and sabotage to set an amazing wartime record of port security and speed shipping on its way to the battlefronts. And it's the Coast Guard that's in there beside the tankers and troop ships, tossing ash cans in the U-boats and taking on anything the enemy puts in their way. You know, they got a little motto in the Coast Guard, Semper Paratus, always ready. And, mister, whenever there's a tough job to do, you'll find the Coast Guard always ready and willing and able to do it. Thanks, fellas. So long, boys!